Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Hey, girl. Welcome to Food for Thought.
We back!
A podcast gab fest wherein a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for thought. Your reading rainbow could never. I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. I'm a poet and editor. And you can call me a bench as long as you call me a bench who can sing.
Oh my God. Teebs,
every time.
I'm Fran, a writer, editor, and since the last time you guys saw me, Nick Jonas has read one of my tweets and offered to choke me with his thighs.
Did he offer or was he a little scared?
He technically offered, Dennis.
He said, okay.
We'll put it in the newsletter.
I'm Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, chronic oversharer, and I can now poop without crying.
Oh my God.
What?
Okay.
Oh my God.
You kicked off the
argument. I can't. And I am Dennis Norris II, and I'm a writer. I'm a reader. I'm a former figure skater, and I'm the next Simone Biles.
Oh my God.
Are you though?
I am.
All right. Fake news.
What she wants.
Joe, would you tell us what's on the menu this week?
Absolutely. This week, you guys, we decide who's the pitcher and who's the catcher. We tell you how to become a super thought. And we let you know that we ain't flying coach no more.
So, here at Food for Thought, we believe that identity is fluid and that reductive binaries like top and bottom are just tired labels created to reduce us to our sex. However, sometimes sexual labels are funny as hell. In this game called Top Secret, I will name some iconic duos from pop culture or otherwise, and y'all will tell me who's the top. Are y'all ready?
Yes. We are.
Yes.
I can't wait.
We'll start out with some easy ones. Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Beyonce.
I think they're verse.
I was just going to say they are
definitely. I think they're verse as well.
They're definitely verse. But there's pegging happening in that relationship.
For sure.
Jay-Z has been pegged by a many.
Not just Beyonce.
Like she's been fisted, girl.
Oh, my God. Okay. Ellen and Portia de Rossi.
I actually would say Ellen is the bottom.
I think so too. Yeah. I think Portia is like a mommy top.
Yeah,
agreed.
Quiet mommy top.
Mommy blogger top.
Dennis, what do you think?
I agree. I think that Portia is a massive top.
Wow.
I do.
This is teams. She's like speak softly and carry a big stick. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I love how we're already breaking down this sort of femme butch top bottom
thing.
That's
exactly. Yeah. So Batman and Robin.
They're both bottoms.
I think it's I think it's a non-penetrative relationship.
Double-ended dildo.
Because they get on the bed and they assume the exact same position.
Okay, but like,
and they get themselves where they need to be.
Okay, but some help. Controversial. This is teams. Is Robin a minor? Because
No, he's not.
Robin was a minor when they got going. It was a very Celine Dion, Angelil situation.
We here at Food for Thought do not condone.
Oh my God.
Statutory.
Next one. Michelle Obama and Barack Obama.
Oh wow. Michelle is definitely the top.
I think they're two tops.
But then who did the bottom?
America.
Republicans.
I think Barack is a quiet top, and that, that Michelle is like the louder like, dom top.
Yeah,
she's that. Like, she's like, shut the fuck up.
Put your face. Yeah. No, Michelle is like, put your face in the motherfucking pillow. I don't want to hear a peep from you.
Yeah,
ass
take it
back yeah.
right
take
now.
It yeah, yeah, yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. There's some bondage involved.
Man, I'm so glad we all understand
it's
this game.
Brilliant.
Okay, so we have Herman Melville and Nathaniel Hawthorne.
I'm going to say Moby Dick is the top.
You? Oh. Interesting. See, I agree. I think Herman is the top, but I think that he uses a strap-on.
Who's named Herman? You know what I mean? Like, who's named
that
Herman?
Is a very good question.
I'm now naming my first child Herman, just to spite you teams.
Thank you.
It's a good life choice.
I like taking credit for things.
I think I'm going to go ahead and say Nathaniel's the top.
Oh,
because I like that book better.
that is the most Dennis answer.
No, but Dennis is supposed to be the one who's like, I only like bottoms. I mean, against bottom shaming. Bottoms are the best.
True.
I'm totally against bottom shaming, but I want to be topped by tops, and I like that better.
I want to be topped by tops is the name of your autobiography, Dennis.
Also the name of your band.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Salt and Pepper, not the hip hop trio, but the seasoning.
Oh.
Bitch.
Oh.
Pepper, I kind of want to say Pepper is the top, but again, I think maybe Salt is like a quiet top.
Yes. Yeah,
because it's like in everything. You
Salt
know what I mean?
Is in Salt gets in everything. And the thing is, when Pepper gets in everything, it still stays separate. You know, you can still see a fleck of Pepper, but the salt sort of melts into it, which is very toppy to me.
And it's also a preservative. And I feel like Dick is like giving
that
you life.
Yeah.
You
know Dick is giving you life,
It's keeping you alive. I don't know. I sort of feel like Pepper is the... Pepper thinks it's the top, but Salt is actually the top,
yes,
and Salt
yes.
is a little resentful every time Salt has to bottom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, also all of my relationships ever.
Are you the Salt then?
I'm the Pepper.
You're the Pepper. I just wanted to hear you say it.
I'm the Pepper.
Gotcha. And next we have Zadie Smith's Swing Time and Zadie Smith's On Beauty.
Oh my God. My favorite two Zadie novels ever.
In that they're the only two you've read, bitch.
True. Where's the lie?
Nowhere.
I have no shame. That's true. Swing Time is the top because I feel like it just like hit the scene and like ran. And On Beauty was beautiful, but On Beauty was this sort of elegant, thoughtful, meandering thing.
Oh my God.
No,
and
wrong.
that's how I think of
I agree with Dennis.
They both bottom for NW.
Oh my God. That's very important. Okay. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
We have Hanya Yanagihara's A Little Life and All the White Gays That Read It.
Just epic bottom. It is a sea of bottoms. Yes. It's like when you go into a sex party and you just see a wall of bottoms just sitting there ready to take any dick.
NBD. Like, on a random Saturday night, who's at a sex party?
Just put your butt out.
Up, ready to take it.
A Little Life.
Face down, ass up. Just like Michelle said.
It tops no one.
No, A Little Life, I feel like, tops all those queens.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Really?
I think it also is a bottom.
Because it's like a gaping hole.
But it is a gaping hole.
But who is it getting topped by is my question.
I think nobody maybe. But I will say this, because it's such a big,
lonely bottom.
It is a big dicked bottom. It is definitely a big dicked bottom.
I think that's fair.
It has
a lot of girth.
It has heft to it.
again, without shaming either position, our podcast and the Nancy podcast.
Oh, no. Oh, Fred, I hate you.
Oh.
I mean, I would just say Frottage.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Frottage.
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 We love them. They love us. It's like a perfect match made in heaven. Yeah.
And we have Dennis's Android and Joe's iPhone 4 that hasn't been updated since 2015.
They're both trash. Wow. They're both asexual. Grindr does not load on either of the phones.
Grindr loads on my phone just fine. Thank you.
Which is why we can only get in touch with you by Grindr, because text messages don't go through to your dumbass phone.
Oh my God. That's true. They come, they just don't come in order. They keep it surprising. It's like a scavenger hunt.
I like how your phone is basically everything but a phone.
That is true.
It really is.
That is true. I am a millennial. It's 2017.
Bitch,
I don't
are
use
nobody's
it as a
millennial.
Phone.
How old
I don't
are you?
Use it as a phone.
Dennis How old
like,
are you?
Look,
did
31.
You know these phones can tell time? Podcast rules. No one is allowed to say I'm a millennial anymore.
Agreed. Ever.
We'll see about that.
And we have, who's the top? Joe and the capitalist establishment.
Oh, the capitalist establishment.
Absolutely. Top every time.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah.
Every time. Joe be trying it.
Against my will. Against my will.
Just, it's jackhammering away.
But like it's not a fun. It's just bloody. It's just messy down there.
Oh, God.
It's just like,
it comes. It just keeps going.
It keeps going.
It never loses its heart.
I probably don't have health insurance because of the capitalist establishment. Like, it's not a pretty picture.
Which is a shame because maybe you need, like, a little rejuvenation surgery to get yourself
she
in
does.
Shape again.
She does need a little rejuvenation surgery down there.
We have Joe and a loving monogamous life partner who has made him choose one position for the rest of his life. And I want everyone else to answer before Joe.
Okay.
Who's at top in this situation? I mean, I feel like, oh my God.
The relationship is clearly the top.
Oh, there you go.
The relationship is the top.
Win.
The relationship has the power.
Zen is
so insightful.
And I say this with no shade. I love you, Joe,
that
so much.
That makes me sound so healthy.
The relationship has the power.
That makes me sound so healthy.
That's your reaction, and I think that's fucking crazy. But anyway, more about that later. The relationship is the top.
I would be the bottom.
There we go. The verdict. Wrapping up here, Fran and Joe.
Okay. Full disclosure, we've been having some fights over email.
Not fights. They're quarrels.
No, they're lovingly. Clearly, like, them swords is crossed, so it's both tops.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Them swords.
Yeah. Them swords is, yeah.
And the podcast is the bottom.
Some healthy.
Sorry, that was fridge. Res vernacular for all of you.
And for our last one, who's the top? Dennis and an edgeless, shapeless, inanimate object with no protrusions and only orifices.
That thing ends up inside of his butt. The entire thing. The entire Somehow. Thing goes in Dennis's
yeah.
butt.
That's not even like a question it's probably, or a debate.
It is,
like,
it is a goop egg and it is in him right now.
Stop it with the fucking visuals. Oh my God.
I was taking that 2 hours ago. Were you talking? Yeah.
The goop egg healing pussy.
It is in Dennis right now.
Extreme bottom pride, always and forever. The receptive partner is God, and there we have it. Like, I don't know what to say.
I'm done. I quit the podcast. Well, I'm done.
Let's hard pivot.
Thank you so much for playing.
Okay. For our next segment, we're going to get into our thought life hacks.
Yes, help
which
us help you.
I'm not sure Dennis knows what a life hack is, but
fair.
I want to hear from let's go to Fran first. What are some of your life hacks?
I'm going to introduce you guys to the way to ignore an email effectively.
Ooh.
So
you've done this to me.
I have. That's true. Wait, have I really?
Yeah.
When was the last time I ignored your email,
as,
girl?
As Fran editor. Fran editor has, I think, ignored an email.
But I emailed you eventually.
Yes, you did.
So, as an editor, I do have to ignore a lot of emails, or I have to stave off emails. And sometimes, you know, I am not at the level on which I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails a day in which I literally cannot answer them. I do try and figure out how I can answer them without actually having to address or do any work for it. So I think that if someone is reaching out to you, let's say another nice young homosexual who says, oh my God, I really admire your work. Like, I super love everything you do. I want to learn how to be you. Can I get coffee with you and pick your brain sometime, which is a really complimentary thing. However, I am someone of the mindset who does not feel obliged and does not feel like he owes any time to anyone else just because they are not an asshole.
Talk about
me.
That access.
Yeah, just because they're not an asshole. So anyways, I think that the best way to say something to that person is to be like, hey, thank you so much for your time. I super appreciate it. I'm super in flux right now. I'm super busy. If you can email me back in about a month or in 3 weeks or whatever and follow up, maybe we can talk again. And more often than not, the person does not follow up within a week, month.
And then puts it on them.
And the people who do, in that sense, I believe, are more worthy of my time and energy.
You are a better person than me because this is Teebs. I just don't respond.
Tommy does not respond.
Exactly.
What are some of your life hacks, Joe?
Did you guys know that you can indeed take poppers on a plane?
I didn't know that you could not.
I guess, yeah.
Very important.
You just have to put it in your liquids bag, right?
Well, because they're in such a small container.
Yeah, it's a little thing. I just put it in my bag and I'm good to go. I can take poppers anywhere.
Well, it's less than 3 ounces, right?
But I will also, one of my other life hacks is that if you're traveling to Europe, you should get poppers there because the chemistry is different and it's legal to have real amyl nitrites there, and so the poppers in Europe are better.
Okay.
Life hack number two.
And when you say better, what does it do to your body that these little poppers in the United States don't do?
It's just a different high. It's just a better, like, it's actually the old school. They outlawed it in the United States in like 2007, 2006 maybe.
Homophobia?
Yeah, homophobia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people hate gay sex.
What about you, Teebs?
Well, I have one, which is like how to get a date to pay for dinner and drinks.
Oh, okay.
I'm just sharing this with y'all. Don't, you know, spread it around the internet or nothing like that. And I'm sorry, anybody who wants to take me out, you're going to pay. What I do is, first of all, I'm a sparkling conversationalist. And when the check comes, I just make sure to pull my wallet out second. So like, I watch them do it, and then I wait for them to pull out their credit card or their money or whatever, and then I go, oh, and then I pull mine out, and they're like, no, I got it. So it's like,
it's like you make a gesture towards.
Yes, so we have both assumed that person is going to pay, and then by then having this other assumption that I'm going to contribute is suddenly an affront to the situation, and then they just leave their credit card on the table and they sign on the dotted line.
I mean,
Dennis, do you have any?
That's beautiful. So I've discovered this new app called Lyft.
Hate you.
And it takes you around. No. I don't know. I Google. I don't know.
She doesn't have to. She doesn't have to hold her hand out for cabs no more because she's on that Lyft life.
Yeah, it's a good life. Lyft here today.
This is Joe again.
The train is terrible.
Did you know that if you get some brown spots on some white sneakers that poppers will take those right off.
Oh my god, what can
that's amazing. That's amazing. That is incredible.
Poppers are also an amazing illuminator for your skin and face.
No, don't put it on your skin. It can. I've learned this accidentally. Poppers also do act as hair removal devices, but
what?
I would not recommend it. I would not recommend it.
That's
keep poppers
horrible.
Generally
didn't they start
away
off as like they would
skin.
Clean VHS tapes?
That's what they're sold as, but I've never tried to use them. I cannot tell you as a life hack that you should use poppers to clean your VHS tapes, but they are advertised as such. I will also say, if you're into using poppers, if you take it and put it in a little plastic bag with a paper towel in the plastic bag, it as a nice way to keep the popper super fresh and accessible during your popper use evening.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
And then you can use the paper towel over your face like a rag and chloroform?
Exactly. Or? I mean, that's what people do. They just kind of open the bag and like hold the paper towel up to their
y'all are fiends. Y'all are fiends.
I'm just saying, you know, poppers are multifaceted.
I have one more that is the opposite of the first life hack that I gave you. there is an app called MixMax that tells you when other people have read your emails.
I love it. You told me about it, and I downloaded it. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Similar to what Tommy said, don't go spreading this around, but MixMax is a free Gmail plugin that you can put in, and it tells you what time someone opened your email, how many times they opened your email. It is also just an amazing organizational
How many times they open it up, so I know how many times
the editor has gone back and looked at it four or five times. It tells me if they clicked on a link. Yep. It tells me if they downloaded an attachment.
But what about privacy?
Yes. It's like read receipts you can't turn off, bitch. In addition to that, it is just an amazing organizational tool. Like, you can send emails later. So
I
like
love that.
If you're you're like 1 a.m. and you don't want to seem like a crazy person sending an email, you just schedule it for 6 a.m. in the morning so people thought that you were awake at 6 a.m.
But also, you know, there are times of the day where editors are more likely to answer your emails.
Right.
So you can set it for like Tuesday at 2.
Don't send it on a Friday.
Don't send it after 5.
Mm-hmm. And you can schedule follow-ups. You can like put in like scheduling things, and it's amazing.
It actually de-stresses the email process because instead of like you just the email goes off into the ether when you're not thinking about it, and then you're not sitting there clicking refresh.
Especially as a writer, it's a great way to get into factory mode and to just crank it out on like 5 different
things.
You know?
I have also one more.
Oh, of course.
Do you guys know that the best food to eat before bottoming as a snack? Jalapeno poppers.
Oh my god, liar.
Explain.
Fake news. Fake news. Fake news.
That's it. That's it for me. Okay. I'm done. Okay. I quit the podcast. Okay.
It's gotta go.
Speaking about de-stressors, my final life hack. Hi, this is Tommy. My final life hack had to do with me getting over my insomnia, which I suffer from bigly. Oh,
no. You also quit the podcast. Sorry.
And I'm out.
Oh, my God.
The thing that helped cure, and I wouldn't say cure because it's still there, but that helped me with my insomnia is this amazing, you know, completely legal Pacific Northwest weed. So the first time I went to Seattle, I walked into a shop with a friend of mine, and as a dispensary, and they just hand you a menu and they say, how do you want to feel? And I was like, this is the promised land. And I got this tincture that was like two parts CBD to THC, and it just like, I had assumed that sleep was a place of battle constantly.
That's right.
So
that's
it wasn't a place of relaxation.
That's what insomnia does.
And it's like what the tincture did was it helped me reassociate sleep as a place of relaxation.
Yes. Mm. Mm-hmm. Teams actually has one more. Teams.
Wind is amazing. I constantly rediscover that whenever I'm high. And also butter on bread, so good.
He literally texts the group chat. Teams just texted the group chat, you guys, the wind. It's amazing. Teams, are you high?
Ice water is good.
Also, butter. On bread is the best invention of all time.
Thank you, Alex, our producer, who is also an enjoyer of wind occasionally.
All right.
Amazing.
It's time to move on.
Now it's time for the meat of our discussion, the thought process, spelled THOT. And today we're talking about the upgrade, glow, the come up. I mean, silk line blazers, diamond cream facials, VVS cufflinks, six-star pants, sweet baby, let me upgrade you.
But oh my God.
For reals, we're in a new season, replete with the next level trappings that spring from our partnership with Into, a digital magazine for queer news and culture.
Yes.
We got a new budget, we got a new reach, and now we're weekly. So what do we mean when we say upgrade you? I'm talking about going from making zines and self-publishing to book deals, intern to editor-in-chief, web series like Broad City and Brown Girls to genuine prestige HBO Insecure level shit, mixtape to record contracts. The upgrade is deeply embedded in the quote-unquote American dream. The hustle is real, but the hustle is also fraught, and it made me wonder, is there a difference, an honesty to making something for yourself and your friends in obscurity? And is that something you lose when you make it popular or for popular consumption? Is there a purity to making something for the sake of making it that you lose in the light of exposure? And is that just necessary? Is that an adult-ass trade-off of purity for opportunity in late-stage capitalism? We're talking about quote-unquote authenticity, quote-unquote sincerity amongst quote-unquote exposure and quote-unquote popularity. Does an awareness of what you're doing murk it up? Or does it give you direction and opportunity? Both or neither? Can something be both pure and popular? Dennis's booty would like to argue yes, but I digress. So before I open it up to the general council of thoughts, I have a softball and a hardball for y'all. So question the first, what is your favorite part of Upgrade You by Beyoncé? Video or song?
Definitely the video.
Video.
I mean, it's so fantastic. I mean, the song itself I've played in the gym like every single day for like years and years and years.
Oh, yeah.
But the music video, she has like diamonds in her teeth and
perfect.
Like coming out of like the pool of like gold and oh my God.
And you just know
so
there
amazing.
Is a diamond in her vajayjay. Like it's just there.
At all
it's,
times.
Yeah, is that the theme of today's show?
I've had a couple of this is Tommy. I've had a couple of opportunities to like perform and sometimes they'll do like they'll ask for a walk up music. Like you're walking up to the mound or whatever, so you go to the stage of the podium and it's always the first part of Upgrade You. Because it's like ding 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 ding. And so kind of a hardball I'd like to throw at y'all is what are your thoughts on exposure?
Ooh. And like the upgrading that comes with that.
Fran.
I have a lot of feelings on, I mean, we all come from places that feel less than where we are now in New York City. And I do have a lot of feelings about where, when I moved to New York, I feel like I left behind a big chunk of myself that is no longer who I am today. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily me being dishonest. That was me being like, hey, there's this whole section of insecurities and other shit that I don't want to associate with myself right. anymore. And I'm not going to bring that with me to New York City.
This message comes from iHeartRadio sponsor, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should really think about getting a quote from Mercury, because Californians save an average of $677 with Mercury. It's quick and easy, and in just a few minutes, you might find you could save a lot of money on your auto and home insurance. Plus, Mercury was named one of America's best insurance companies by Insure.com 4 years in a row. Low rates, big discounts, great insurance. Go to MercuryInsurance.com today to get a quote.
It's crazy how much we have to pay for outdated, impersonal healthcare, and even crazier that we all just accept it. It's time to face facts. Healthcare is backwards. Luckily, there's Forward, a new approach to primary care that's surprisingly personal and refreshingly straightforward. Forward never makes you feel like just another patient. Backed by top-rated doctors and the latest tech, Forward gives you access to personalized care whenever you need it. Using in-depth genetic analysis and real-time blood work, Forward's top-rated doctors provide you with in-depth insights to better understand your genetics, mental, and physical health. They then create custom, easy-to-understand plans to help guide you to achieving long-term health. With Forward, you get unlimited in-person visits with your doctor and access to care anytime via the Forward app, all for one flat monthly fee. It's time to stop accepting backwards healthcare and start moving your health forward. Visit GoForward.com today to learn more. That's GoForward.com.
At Capella University, education is as smart as the world around us. With the FlexPath format, you can take classes at your own pace, set your own deadlines, and even leverage your previous experience to move faster. Now that's smart. Learn more at Capella.edu.
Peace to the planet. Charlamagne Tha God here. And you don't want to miss Hello Somebody with Senator Nina Turner on the Black Effect Podcast Network. I love Hello Somebody simply because I love Nina Turner. She's fearless.
I'm Nina Turner, hell-raising humanitarian, sister in the struggle, and recovering elected official. Listen to Hello Somebody every Thursday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The consequence of that, I think what came with that is that the people that I used to know in that place no longer have as much in common with me.
Of course, right.
So losing those relationships is like one of the hardest things that's
agreed.
Been a part of my moving to New York. Jenny Zhang has this super beautiful quote in talking about her being a parent of immigrants. And she says, for me, knowing that part of them loving me is accepting that they've released me to be someone that they can't understand.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
oh, that was from her Another Round yeah. interview. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it was, I think that is like kind of how I think about those relationships. I've moved on to be something that they can't understand.
But do you feel like, and part of what I have a little trouble with this, I mean, I think we're all from places where sort of the work we're doing now and who we are now is like difficult to translate back into our home geography. I think I talked about this last season though, that when I wrote a really literary piece about my hometown, people back home freaking loved it. I mean, it like went viral in my hometown of like 1,000 people in a way that I was totally blown away by. Wow. So I felt like, the act of translating what I'm doing now back to folk back home, if I do shit that they care about, they absolutely, we speak the same language still in a way. So I wonder sometimes about this notion of like upgrading and how that diminishes sort of the places that we came from. Mm. Like I don't necessarily feel mm-hmm. like New York is better than the place I came from, or I'm better than the people who made a life back home. I actually wonder if I might be, you know, happier in certain ways if I had stayed back home and had kids and like literally lived on a farm like a lot of the people I grew up with. Mm-hmm.
I have similar questions and similar attentions to that. I mean, there were no farms where I in my like growing up. So it's not that or like necessarily staying there and getting married and having kids, but I think about this this question a lot, and it's interesting because I remember that when I was in college and when I was like in graduate school, both of those times, I really felt like I had moved forward and right. that I had kind of stepped away from my roots in some ways. And there are friends who I was less in contact with, like close friends from like high school, for example, who I was less in contact with. And it's interesting because now that we're like, I'm about 10 years out of college, and I've lived you know, 5 years in this city, done graduate school. I've lived in Philadelphia, and I have this life that looks to some people and feels very sort of cosmopolitan and feels very New York. Mm-hmm. I look back on some of those friendships, and some of those friendships are friendships that have come back to me,
yeah,
or that have like grown stronger.
Right.
And it's actually helped me to think less of this difference as being a hierarchical difference.
That's right.
And more as just being different, some different choices. And I do often think about if in certain ways I would be happier in Cleveland as well. And again, it's not like farm country. It's like I grew up in this very artsy place. There's mm-hmm. like lots of fabulous things about that area. It's a real big food town now, which is interesting. But with Michael Simon, the chef. But anyway, I think about this a lot, and I hesitate to sort of make a hierarchical difference there.
Teebs?
Exposure to me, what I was thinking about was how when you, we all, you know, we write things, we put them out there, we publish them. I thought a lot about how when you write something and you put it out into the world, it doesn't belong to you anymore.
It doesn't. That's
right. You only really belongs to you when it isn't popular, when it is in obscurity. That's the only time you can
claim
it.
When you're creating it, when it's still an active document in that way,
And so when you, when something goes out into the world and it's not yours anymore, I can't help but feel a little almost postpartum about it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was curious if you guys felt that way after you published something.
Yeah.
I never feel that way. I'm always so happy when it's done and released. Like, I also just like, we've talked about this before, but I could never write and then never show it to anybody. Mm-hmm. There's nothing super sacred about the work that I create unless I have something to share. It's the same way when I like cook and bake. It's just like, I'm going to have an easier time doing the act if I'm making it for other people.
Yeah.
I'm
gonna, it's communal in that way. Refuge.
Yeah. I feel similarly. That's very much how I think about writing. I think of it as an act of love and an act of generosity for someone else. Because I think, like as a writer, I think a lot about what I have received as a reader and what different works and different authors and their words have meant to me and how they've saved my life at different moments. And so I do sort of agree with you, Tommy, in that I think there is a certain purity in it when it's just yours, when it's private. That's like, I mean, for example, when I think about my novel, that's why it's taken me as long as it has, and that's why I'm super protective about who I show it to and when I show it to them and that sort of thing. And I try to only put out work when I feel like it's really ready to be there. But I'm doing it to put it out so that it serves another person in some way that it hope that, that other work has served me.
And a question that I would have, which I really don't know the answer to, is what is the value in the purity before it's released? Like, what to you guys is the thing that makes it worth holding on to?
I would say, I mean, for me, it's just about, this is Joe, just about the process of writing. Like, putting something out into the world, part of the postpartum thing for me is that I don't get to work on it anymore. And it's like, no piece of mine is ever perfect. So it's like, I'm a math nerd, right? So it's like approaching a limit. And that limit might be perfection. As long as it's in my computer and not in the world, I can keep working on it and getting it closer and closer to that place that I would really love it to be in. And then when I put it out into the world, it is a loss to me that I don't get to, and of course I could keep working on it, right? And with certain pieces, certain essays that I've like turned into books or whatever, I do keep working on them. But I definitely feel both a catharsis and a sense of loss as I put it out into the world.
I'm so conflicted about this because first of all, this is Tommy. First of all, like I kind of came up in punk and like making zines. And so I've just been like, I've been inured to the idea that you just constantly produce things and put them out into the world and you don't have a reaction to them. So I would make zines and I would leave them at coffee shops.
You're
and I would leave them at laundromats
the
and I would leave them at, and I would leave them at like restaurants and bars and shit like that. And I would never hear back from anybody who would pick it up. And that was like pretty much what I did for the entirety of my 20s. But like now,
and like IRL kind of is a fuck you. Like IRL sometimes is like a fuck you to the reader. It's a punk book in that way where it asks a lot to be entered into.
Yeah, but now I write so much and I'm just constantly pushing stuff out there because I find exposure to be mortifying. Like, and the more exposed I get, the less approachable I want to be in a certain sense. Like, I don't have social media anymore.
That's
because
right.
like I don't want to be accessible.
That's
there's something
right.
about the accessibility really. I was thinking about it in therapy. Thanks. Thank you, Dr. John. But I was thinking about exposure because like, so I'm from an Indian reservation and I'm from a group of people whose survival was dependent on their invisibility. There are a ton of people in the Kumeyaay Nation who aren't here anymore because they lived on the coast or they lived in more accessible areas. The tribe that I come from, we're in the inland. It doesn't rain very much. There's no big game. There's no arable land. So it wasn't really the conquering people didn't really have that much invested in the interior of California.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so in order to escape subjugation, slavery, and death,
we just had to
stay in the crevices of the mountains in the interior of California. Mm. So, like, in a way, like, being seen,
I feel that,
mm-hmm. yeah, like, generationally almost. So yeah, it's like, that's why I get uncomfortable. You might not know it, but I'm super uncomfortable on stage.
Right. Mm.
What?
Just like, because then they're just like a room with people looking at me.
That's why you, maybe why you adopt such a fabulous and brilliant and well done persona.
Although it's like it's a schism, and I think in my identity,
yeah,
where one thing kind of takes over because like Tommy Pico is not able to like
Tommy can't come to the phone right now. She's dead.
I am the same way, Tommy. I definitely have when I'm in situations. In a situation that calls for me to be something a lot more than what I am, I do have to turn a switch on in my brain that's just like, Fran is dead now, and I have to be this other person.
Yeah.
That sounds really gruesome. It's not that horrific. I like don't kill myself like on a regular basis.
Right.
But I do mean
haters,
like,
you can kill yourself.
But I do feel like I am constantly rising above, or what's that stupid Cary Grant quote where he's like, they were like, oh, did you ever have that? Did you ever try to be famous? Did you have something about fame or something? And he says, like, he says something to the effect of, like, well, I kind of pretended to be the person that I wanted to be until I was that person, you know? And that's kind of how I view my coming into my own here in New York.
But there is also, there's also a cost in terms of the work. I think, Tommy, you talk about this a lot. This is Joe. And I'm starting to feel this more and more that, like, as your profile comes up a little bit, people have different expectations for your work. And there is a freedom. There is a real freedom in making the work you want to make and making it as punk or as weird or as sexual as what you want it to be. For me, my big thing is my work is super personal. And so the exposure feels like, you know, when 10 people were reading it, I was talking about my body and my sex. It felt a little bit more intimate. And if now thousands of people are reading it and I'm talking about my body and my sex,
and you talk about your nacho in front of a room full of people.
We're getting there. We're getting there. It feels very, very different. And so I feel like I've actually constructed my entire life so that I don't have to make money from writing. And what that means is no matter how much exposure I get or don't get, I can write the weird shit, the queer shit, the body shit that I really want to write. And like, if 100 people read it, great. If 1,000 people read it, great. If 100,000 people read it, great. But like, my apartment bills, my phone bill, like none of that is dependent on the exposure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's really strategic and really smart. I just don't care enough. I feel
that's Dennis, everybody. Like, surprising no one that,
like,
is Dennis.
It's so interesting to hear you guys talk about like stage personas and things. And granted, I'm like not on a stage that often, but I like I don't know how to do that. Like, I feel like I only know how to show up to something and be
as myself.
Yeah, and
God bless you.
I think like that's an effect of like not having a traumatic incident have to like bifurcate your personality.
Yeah, I think it maybe is. I don't know. I just like I only know how to like approach it as myself, and I look at my writing the same. It's sort of like when I was coming out of the closet and I was like the super femme kid from the very beginning, and there were so many people who would be like, you're just being a stereotype, and like blah blah blah, like other gay people might like not realize they're gay because they're looking at you when you're flopping your wrists and whatever. And I was just like, I don't know, fuck that. Like, I didn't come out of the closet, so I would have to get into another closet. And I sort of feel like with everything, like, I didn't become a writer so that other people could tell me what to do. Like, if I wanted to be told what to do, I would like have, I mean, I do have a regular job because I have to pay the bills,
right?
But like, that's all I would be trying to do.
Yeah.
And so I just like, I mean, I love editors, and like most of the time when I'm edited, it's like really, really good and helpful.
Agreed.
So it's not like an issue with that. But my point is that like I just sort of feel like this is what it's going to be, and like whatever, like I'll figure out how to make it work. I don't know.
I want to ask on that. I would like to ask a question. Are any of you suspicious of the come up as it regards tokenism?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I wonder, like, when, just because oftentimes the gatekeepers happen to be straight white men, right? So if, like, one of us rises to prominence or gets an opportunity or gets some shine, I'm like, why that person? Why me? Is it just because you needed, somebody to X out a couple boxes. Mm-hmm. I X out that gay box and that native box. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I totally agree with that, and I'm 100% suspicious of tokenism and also just like nepotism when people are rising into things that they don't necessarily deserve, or when I watch like the gay fitness Instagrammer get like 200,000 followers and now everyone thinks he's a thought leader, but he really is just like hot online.
When he's really just a thought.
I want to take
an influencer, Fran?
I do not have enough time in the day to talk about that and answer that question. However,
yeah,
I do want to take that question and flip it and punch the below the belt a little bit. Ooh, and say,
I'm oddly turned on.
When is a time where you guys have had the benefits of the come up and taken advantage of the come up and accepted an upgrade, and in that because of tokenism or at the disadvantage of someone else?
So I was an inaugural fellow at Queer Art Mentors, and my mentor was Pamela Sneed, and I was not the best writer who applied. You know, so I felt guilty taking that opportunity because I knew some other people who'd applied to that program and who didn't get it, and I thought they were way better than me. But I think to a certain extent they had faith. These are the lies that I tell myself anyway. But I think they had faith in my ability to progress, because I did get a lot better working with Pamela.
Right.
Like, she was the first person who made me perform in front of her, and she would stand at the other side of the room and just be like, I need to hear you over here.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like I had to rise to the occasion of being her mentee.
Yes. Yes. And I will say, I mean, I just think looking around the table, I've read all of your work and I love all of your work. It's varied. It's not like we all have very different styles and very different types of work, but everyone here is a good writer. Like, everyone here puts the shit on the page that is deserving of an audience.
Additionally, if we were all straight, oh God, that would suck.
It would be the worst. We would probably be insufferable.
If we were all straight,
you would be.
No one would want to listen to our podcast.
Right.
Our podcast would be so boring.
What would our podcast be?
Yeah, it would just,
would be Fight Club. It would be Fight Club.
Which is your favorite Philip Roth novel?
If we were straight, I would still be a bottom. I'm going to put that out there.
Yes.
But actually, I will say, like,
Norman Mailer is the best.
I love Ayn Rand.
It's Ayn.
Is it really?
It is, yes.
I've never heard it pronounced.
I mean, we don't know her, so why would we know how to pronounce her name?
No. I don't know her personally.
Personally, I think Cheryl Strayed is much better, so just stay there.
Oh, shit.
Wait, that was shade, but I actually do think Cheryl Strayed is way better. So.
Than Ayn Rand, but like a slug covered in salt is better than Ayn Rand. It's like Ayn Rand is not like a thing.
Fine.
It's not a thing.
You all heard it here first. Joe thinks that Ayn Rand is worse than a deteriorating slug.
For the record, as the assistant fiction editor at The Rumpus, which publishes Dear Sugar by Cheryl Strayed, I do not think that Cheryl Strayed is a slug covered in mud.
No, Ayn Rand. We're talking, never mind.
We've got to stop talking about Cheryl Strayed.
And Ayn Rand. moving
let's
on.
Let's pivot on that a little bit.
Pivot on that hard.
I would ask another question, which is, and being suspicious of popularity, oftentimes I think, like, what is, like, simplest or most easily regurgitated is what gets popular.
That's right.
Like, we could talk about some popular poetry. You know what I mean? That's like...
A rupee.
A rupee.
Poetry?
My God.
But
poetry?
Wait, can we, though?
We can. It's not poetry. It's sayings.
Yeah.
It is sayings.
Right. It's truisms.
And so most of them are, colloquial.
We're talking about rupee, by the way,
everybody. We're talking about rupee.
I'm
book
not...
that is, like, currently somehow stocked,
like,
in Target.
Everywhere.
But, like... When was the last time you remembered a poetry book being stocked in Target?
Oh, no.
Like never.
No.
Billy Collins wouldn't even, I think, have been in Target. He's the last, like, quote, famous poet.
Okay, you guys are going to roll your eyes at me so hard. But David Foster Wallace, let's get it out there. In one of his essays on fiction, talks about how the things that are popular are usually the worst, because he argues that people are alike in their sort of superficial desires, and everyone is very unlike and unique in what they're very, very interested in, most profoundly interested in. So in a way, like, anything that is deep and profound is going to be niche, and everything that sort of appeals to the mass, appeals to everyone across, like, taste, is going to be kind of
lowest common denominator.
Exactly. The thing that is the most palatable.
Exactly. The most palatable and the most, like, it appeals to everyone wants to be entertained.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So because everyone wants to be entertained, sitcoms are entertaining.
Right.
But because everyone wants to be challenged differently and read deeply differently, then
those,
like,
things are,
like, you know, those things
more segmented.
Some people are more into visual art and some people more are more into fiction and some people get really into music. But those things that require a lot of us tend to, like, niche us into little segments.
Do
right?
you think? Do you think there is any part of that that is, like, that comes from a place of bitterness at not getting popular?
I definitely have that suspicion. I do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I loathe people more successful than me. Like, that's I joke all the time. I could never date someone who's more successful than me. I would just, like, I would lose it. I would be so furious and
my
jealous
dream.
All of the time.
It is just my dream.
Oh my god.
That is, however, quintessential Fran.
I do think that I've a big part of my growing up has been, you know, working to be so happy for the people and understand yeah. that I'm different from them and I'm growing at my own pace. And also, I do think that we all would be very, well, maybe not, but I feel like we would be selective about the ways we would get our upgrading. Like, we've talked about being on reality, like, would we ever be on a reality TV show together? I've said vehemently, I would not want to be on a reality TV show, even if that skyrockets any of our careers. I don't want that to be the thing that sets me into the next level of upgrading.
Not all come ups are the same.
Exactly.
Right?
Well,
and I think all of us are more interested in the work that we're actually doing than the come up itself. And I think there's the come up that's just for the come up's sake, and then there's the come up that just is a part of the work that you do.
Do you also feel that way, Fran? Sometimes I think that for you, you're interested in the come up as well as the work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Simultaneously, for sure. I'm more focused on notoriety and how it gets an audience than I am on the work, which is, like, one of my biggest faults in how I create things. And that's something that, like, I met with a book agent and she's amazing. And I, like, sent her this, like, 15-page deck on, like, the marketing plan. And she was like, so have you written the book?
Oh my god, Fran, so you were that person.
Yes, Fran is that person.
That is a quintessential example of how I operate.
Yes. Yeah.
And part of it is because, like, marketability, getting an audience, that comes really naturally to me.
Right.
And writing does not. Mm. And so I'm doing the thing that is easier. And I'm taking a back route and I'm putting the cart very much so before the horse.
We are the opposite people.
Yeah. And like that is my biggest fault. But I do, to answer your question a little bit more, I do try and think about them simultaneously.
Yeah.
I'm never thinking about writing without the audience.
And what about, I feel like Teebs is probably the person who, writing wise, has had the most extreme come up in the last year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
How does it motherfucking feel?
Well, I gotta say that I, like, criminally the opposite of Fran in the sense that, like, I don't self-promote enough.
Yeah.
You know, deleted all your social media.
I will say, I have to stop you there because you hustled like a motherfucker with IRL.
True.
You were your own publicist.
True. Yeah, that's
you
true.
Put out you, all true. Your press.
She went hard. She went hard.
But, like, I function so much better with, like, my head down at my desk.
Yes.
Than I do, like, being out there and, like, you know, promoting myself. I think, for example, like, Nature Poem, it came out this year. I didn't go on a tour. I just let Tin House take care of everything. I'm not hitting up newspapers. I ain't hitting up reporters like I did with IRL. When I was like,
you did that.
Yeah. But a part of it, I like that because then I just refocus on the things that I'm writing. Like, now I have a new book coming out next year.
Right.
You know, and I'm working on a screenplay. Like,
also, I love Tommy so much because he's like, I'm never writing a book again. And then 2 weeks later, he's like,
I wrote another book. I have two more books coming out next year.
Yeah.
On that, I do think it's I'm definitely not that. Going back to this question of purity, I do think there is a purity that is palpable in the quality of the work that we read when the person who is behind it is not that invested in the fame.
Mm-hmm.
You can almost read it on the page where a book like A Little Life feels like it's like begging for like a Booker Prize or like a Pulitzer or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and it tried
so
hard. It made its own Instagram account or whatever. That said, those books like that can still be super successful and I think can still be important cultural forms, which is why I go to defend Rupee, because I think that if my book launches, if I did what Tommy did, the book, no one would ever read the book. I would have to be more of a person who takes advantage of the social media swings, who takes advantage of the other resources that I have and pushes it out. I would have to try very hard. Does that make my work less pure?
Probably, like for sure, if it's a question of purity. Does it necessarily mean that the work is worse? Probably not.
All right, it's time to move on.
I'm feeling like I'm full, but I could fit one more thing inside of me. I think Dennis knows what I'm talking about. So would you like to introduce our dessert segment this week, Dennis?
I would love to introduce our dessert segment this week. Basically, our dessert for the week is the one, the fabulous, the extraordinarily beautiful and brilliant Gabrielle Union.
Ageless.
Ageless. How? Stunning.
How?
Absolutely insane.
She's a witch.
So if you are unfamiliar with Gabrielle Union, then you'll know that early on in her come up, you might have seen her in things like she had a guest spot in Friends. She was the black girl that Joey dated for like one episode.
That. Oh my God.
She's also the black girl in 10 Things I Hate About You. She's friends with people. She kind of
was
like that black
she's
girl
that.
For a
yeah,
while.
Yeah, yeah.
She's all that. And kind
she's
of
been
her,
around for a long time.
She's been around for a while. And her big break really was Bring It On, where
That's
she
right.
played ISIS. Mm-hmm. And yeah. she's
so good.
Bring It On.
A name
it's
that has
been
tainted by politics.
For real. For real. But the reason why I was so excited about Gabrielle Union lately is, one, she's been starring for the last few years on the show on BET called Being Mary Jane, and I'm obsessed with the show. In addition to the fact that I relate to her enormously, to her character, she's also been an amazing and outspoken leader when it comes to LGBTQ advocacy for literally decades. She's been an advocate for feminism and sexual assault survivors. She herself is a sexual assault survivor, which she speaks openly about.
And has for a long time.
And has for a long time, for years. So she's also just published her memoir, We're Going to Need More Wine, in which she discusses all of this pretty openly. Obviously, she's someone who we are obsessed with and fits in well with our theme, our show. We always need more wine. We have wine here with us.
Oh my God, so true.
As always.
My favorite Gabrielle moment was I think she was giving a speech at like the Essence Women's Luncheon, and it's this really like heartbreaking speech. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's very poetic, but like the crux of it is like every single time you women were successful, I hated you.
That's right.
I hated your success. Mm-hmm. I hated that you got a part that I didn't get. I hated all of these things about you, and that poisoned me for so long.
We live in a town that rewards pretending. And I had been pretending to be fierce and fearless for a very long time. I was a victim masquerading as a survivor. I used to revel in gossip and rumors and I lived for the negativity inflicted upon my sister actresses or anyone who I felt whose shine diminished my own.
And she talked about the idea of coming into her reconciliation with that way we poison ourselves, which is really great on today's theme, which is upgrading.
How you feel sometimes that other people's success is your failure.
Exactly.
Where it's not.
Which it's not at all. Yeah, that's you have all. To figure out, you have to find joy in the success of your peers, especially the ones that are going for the exact same thing, that are trying to produce the exact same amazing art.
If you love someone, you love their success, even if it's not yours.
Exactly.
In a way
it
is shared. She says that basically your success is my success in the end.
Speaking specifically
to women of color.
Exactly.
And speaking about an upgrade, a BINCH just got Amazon Prime.
And
I'll let you know that She's All That is on Amazon Prime right now.
Shut up.
The other day.
Amazing.
And I was like, oh my God, like she has not aged a day.
She has
but then
not
also,
it's wild.
I was watching an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, which is also on, I think it was Star Trek Next Generation, it might have been Deep Space Nine, which is also on Amazon Prime, and like I'm a Trekkie, whatever.
I was younger,
all right? Yeah. I watched it with my mother, that's how we bonded, don't judge me. Did you know that Gabrielle Union played a Klingon?
No!
Yes!
What?
Yes.
Oh my God.
She did.
She's perfect.
She played a Klingon.
I'm so mad.
She's never wanted to watch Star Trek until this very moment.
She's completely everything, and she's also now living in Cleveland because Dwayne Wade is playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I'm fully expecting that I'm going to meet her over Thanksgiving.
Is that a sports thing?
It's a couple crush. I would get fucked by both of them. Let's be honest. That is
a
dream.
They would both top you.
Oh my God, it would be perfect.
Gabrielle could beat it up.
Beat it up.
She could beat it up. Oh, and recently in an interview, she was talking about how she's not ashamed of having eaten ass. And yeah. I think that's amazing. And especially like as a straight woman, like I think that's interesting thing. Yeah. So basically, she's just all around badass, amazing, brilliant. We are here for her. Gabrielle, please
listen
tweet and one day come on the show. We are not worthy, but also we are worthy. So come on the show. We love you.
Girl.
We are upgraded.
Don't be scared, we eat ass too.
Well, y'all do.
Oh my god.
You've eaten ass, Dennis. You texted us about it.
I did, like a month ago. It's true. My first time. It wasn't all right, bad.
All right. Okay, let's get out of here. Food for Thought is made possible, as you know, by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé, but also now through our new partnership with Into, a digital magazine for queer news and culture. Our engineer is Alex Mead Fox at Spaceman Sound Studios in the heart of industrial Greenpoint, New York. And our producer, the fabric of our lives, is Alexandra De Palma.
Yes, queen.
I'm Tommy Pico. You can't find me on the internet anymore, but you can get me at your bookstore.
I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on any relevant social media.
I'm Joseph Osmondson. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com.
And I am Dennis Norris II, and you can find me on Twitter at The Earl Denden, TheEarlDenden.
Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, and perhaps mention the thought you'd most like to bone. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at Food for Thought Pod. Find us on Instagram at Gay Sluts Who Read or Gay Sluts Horad, however you want to contextualize that one. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever fine outlets you get your shows. Sign up for our newsletter for episode insights, reading lists, and extra delectable content at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics is still in the copy. Oh my god.
Yes. We get dick pics, you guys. Yes. So please
keep
send
them. Keep
we
them
have
coming.
Them in a private Google Drive folder.
Please don't. Anyway, send whatever to thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
THOT.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.